Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call today, our old friend Matt Leon last night for Villanova. The winning streak in the Big Five is over.
Broder defending the inbound, 1.3.
I think you foul.
Let's
you
see
foul.
What they do. They get it into the corner. Boom for three. No good. It's over. The Quakers have snapped Villanova's 25-game Big Five winning streak with a 78-75 win over the Villanova Wildcats.
We are in an era of college basketball where young gets people excited, one and dones. In reality, those who last through the season are the older teams. Penn's an older team now than Villanova is. All right, let's bring in Jerry Dulac. Jerry, always a pleasure. Welcome back, my friend.
Well, Steve, thanks. And, you know, I always enjoy talking with you. And here it is a month or so later, and I'm still sick over that Michigan State loss and Ohio State loss.
Yeah, you know what? And I feel the same way because, you know what, in the end, Jerry, I still honestly believe Penn State's better than those two teams.
Oh, I do too. And the people were talking about the devastating loss to Michigan. Well, it was lopsided, but the ones that really hurt are those two because they had it and they lost it at the end.
Yep. No question. Now I want to get to the Steelers. For a period of time, they had it. So let's stay on that theme. Of late, what has allowed them to lose it?
Well, you know, Steve, when you look at the last four games, they've all come down to the final play. And they're 1-3 in those games. And they very easily could be 10-2-1, and everybody would be talking about them as the best team in the AFC, the most dangerous team, what have you. And they very easily could be 6-6-1. They're 1-3 in those games, and that's where they are. They're 7-5-1. Your record, I've always believed that your record says what you are, and the way they are playing right now by not being able to finish games, they're a 7-5-1 football team. But there is no question, offensively, I don't have to defend them. But we have even seen flashes defensively of a unit that from time to time would lead you to believe they can and would beat anybody. And, you know, they lead the NFL in sacks. They get great pressure on the quarterback, but they don't take the ball away. And since that Jacksonville game, when they forced 4 3 and outs to end the game, gave the ball back to the offense, and Ben brought them back, they haven't done that at all. They don't get off the field. They haven't stopped anybody when it counted. And that's been the key. They are an inopportunistic defense instead of an opportunistic defense. And really, that's all you have to be in today's NFL. You don't have to be a shutdown defense. Oh, it's nice if you're the Bears right now or when you look at the way the Seahawks are playing or one of those defensive-oriented teams. But you don't have, in today's NFL, you don't have to be a lockdown defense. You just have to be able to come up with stops or a key pick or a turn takeaway when it's needed. As long as you have the offensive capability to go up and down the field. You look at that Denver game. They went up and down the field, Steve, on the Broncos. 527 yards, 27 first downs, 35 minutes time of possession, throwing it 55 times. They made it look easy, but they turned it over four times, twice at the goal line, once at their 21, and you lose the ball game. And what hurt about this pass game, though, is that none of that happened. They didn't even beat themselves. The Raiders beat them, scoring on their last two possessions, especially that last drive. And that's what was deflating to them about the loss in Oakland.
Yeah, no question about it. I know when I've talked about defense in the modern era, I said, look, the job of any defensive coordinator to me in this era, Jerry, find me one more stop each half. If you can find me one more stop each half, do you agree with that?
Absolutely, and that if they stop the Raiders once in the fourth quarter, or as one of those last two drives, they win the ball game. You know, they even when they didn't stop them, Here comes Ben riding on his right white horse. Bang, bang, bang. 6 of 6, 70 yards, right down the field, touchdown. And then if they stop them, they win the game. And if they didn't stop them, if they stopped them the series before, then none of that was necessary. That's all they needed was one stop, and they win that game. And it was basically the same deal in Denver. The same thing. They blew a lead against the Chargers. The only thing I'll say about that, though, Steve, is it was Phillip Rivers. And you have to give him all the credit in the world. That guy at age 37 stood in that pocket and made throws, getting hit, guys barreling at him. He was hit 9 times, sacked a couple times, 9 other pressures, and he just made throw after throw. And he's a Hall of Fame quarterback for that reason. And so, you know, people complain about it, and I say, yeah, but it was Phillip Rivers. I'll give them that. He just picked them apart when he had to. When he had to on that last drive. Same deal. One stop, they win that game. But that's what they're not doing.
Yeah, that was not Josh Allen picking them apart. It was Phillip Rivers.
Right, exactly.
A little different ball game. James Conner in the first half of the season was really, really good, very, very productive. He's had a couple of tail-offs. Obviously, he didn't play on Sunday against the Raiders. Getting him back, what would that mean just to give them a little bit of balance there?
Well, you know, it would certainly help. It would certainly help the run game. Now, his last couple games, though, haven't been as productive as you mentioned.
Right.
He had 5 100-yard games, 4 in a row. That was the 5 were the most in the league, tied for the most in the league at the time. I think he's since been passed by Zeke and even Saquon Barkley. But I don't know if now he's not going to play this Sunday either, Steve. And I'm not so sure he'll be back for New Orleans. I think he will be because I think obviously the game's going to be important. But he won't play this week. And I don't know if his style, even though he's a young guy, I mean, he takes on tacklers. He was leading the league in forced missed tackles for the longest time, not only because he was making guys miss, but because he was breaking tackles with his style. I don't know if a season long of that starts to catch up with you in addition to the amount of passes he caught or what. I don't see that. I don't see him being tired or looking different, but maybe what I'm not seeing is different from what he's feeling, for all I know. But, you know, the production hasn't been there, but I'm not ready to say that, you know, that his season is going downhill and is going to stay there. The injury, of course, you know, is precluding any improvement, but maybe the last couple games, and should they get into the playoffs, which right now, you know, they should, but we'll see. And, you know, he should be okay. You know, we'll see how he does, but he should be okay in the postseason.
Isn't it amazing, though, that opening week tie with Cleveland hangs over this race?
Yeah, I mean, it does, Steve. I mean, because it was the manner in which they tied. Up 21-7 with 7 minutes to go. And speaking of James Conner, he fumbles, gets stripped by Myles Garrett. They go in and score. Then Ben gets a strip sack on the next series. They go in and score. And just like that, they blow a 21-7 lead to the Browns. And it, even though it was a tie and you get half a win, it felt like a loss. And that's what was, you know, that's what was bad about that game. It was just kind of like the Denver game. Those are the games where you kick yourself, where you're dominating the ball game, and you let that happen. And even if you look at the Tampa Bay game, that was their best first half of the year, arguably. The Carolina game was pretty good, too. They just went up and down the field and dominated Tampa Bay, and then at the end they give up like 3 lame touchdowns. I say lame, but all of a sudden, Bucks make a game of it because their defense doesn't put the game away. And that's their greatest weakness, is their inability to finish defensively, their inability to put teams away by coming up with stops when necessary.
Jerry, what have you thought of Ben Roethlisberger?
I think Ben Roethlisberger is having, Steve, as good a year as he's ever had. And by that I mean, when if you look at this team, imagine what they would be without Ben Roethlisberger. When he has brought them back at key times, when they absolutely have had to. Yeah, he leads the league in attempts. He leads the league in passing yards. And the criticism is the amount of interceptions he's thrown. But in that time since 2015, Steve, where he's thrown 54 interceptions or whatever that number is since 2015, second most, I think, to Blake Bortles is the number that people want to point up. In that time, no other quarterback has a better record or won more games with the exception of Tom Brady. And that's what Ben Roethlisberger does. He's a gunslinger. He takes chances, though. The reason he takes chances are the reason they win those games. I think Aaron Rodgers is the greatest pure passer of the ball that I think I have ever seen. But when you look at what he's doing in Green Bay, despite how fantastic he is, 353 passes in a row, or whatever that number is, Steve, without an interception, is just incredible. But they don't win games. And you know, Ben Roethlisberger wins games because he takes chances. He always has. He's age 36, and in 15 years, he is still doing it. He's won more games than Eli Manning, more games than Phillip Rivers, and he's closing in on passing Elway and Marino, maybe by the end of this year or early next year, in total wins despite playing one less season. That's what this guy does, and I've seen no drop-off in his excellence, and I think those people who complain about some dumb throws or some interceptions, yeah, would he like them back, and are some of them maddening? Yeah, but what he does to counter that is, to me, is just incredible. And I think any of those people who hold that against him, I don't think they know what they're looking at or don't appreciate what he really does for this football team.
I agree with that completely, and here's one of the reasons why. I feel that the way they have had to have played defense, especially in the secondary, with Connor becoming inconsistent in the second half of the season, he's had much more pressure on him, and he's the one that's kept them in games.
No question. Yeah. I mean, you just look at what happened in Oakland. I mean, there was a glimpse, and I'm not picking on Josh Dobbs, but was a glimpse of what you might be looking at if you don't have Ben Roethlisberger. You're not getting any production offensively. You look terribly sloppy. There's no continuity. And then, you know, the defense gives up that drive, and it's like, uh-oh, we got to put Ben back in now because now we're trailing. They didn't want to do that. He comes in, and like I said, 70 yards. He makes it look easy. You know, he does. Here's another thing, too, Steve, to when we talk about being opportunistic and the defense, of course, being inopportunistic.
Right.
In eight of the games, he has scored. He's put him on a touchdown drive in 8 of the 13 games on their last possession in the final 2 minutes of the first half. That type of momentum that he gives them, and a lot of times, you know, they defer and take the second half kickoff. Then they come out in the third quarter, and I don't know what the number is, but they convert their field goal or touchdown at the beginning of the third quarter. Those are big momentum shifts with them, and it's because of what he does when time is running out and absolutely necessary. He is a clutch, big-time, big-stage quarterback. There's no doubt about it. And those are the kind of the little things that go unnoticed, but those are big momentum shifts that he provides for the team. And believe me, those guys on that team know it.
A quick thought on New England. Obviously, they're at 9-4 right now. They're coming off the loss to Miami. But I'm also looking at losses to Tennessee, Detroit, Jacksonville. Obviously, they're not the same team that they were last year. No team is. But how do you look at New England?
Well, and as losses you mentioned, too, look at the Tennessee game, 34-10. The Jacksonville game was lopsided.
Right.
Detroit was just sloppy. They're all on the road. They're 3-4 on the road, Steve. I mean, that's downright shocking for the Patriots. I haven't looked, but I need to do this and see the last time they had a losing record on the road. This will be their last road game. So it's conceivable they could end up 3-5 on the road. At best, they're going to be 4-4. So they have not played well on the road. You know, they've had injuries with Edelman. Gronk's just been nagged all year. And Brady's, even though his sack numbers are down, the games they have lost or struggled is when he has been under pressure, and that's going to be a big key for the Steelers on Sunday. And they lead the league in sacks. They've been providing a lot of pressure, but that's what they're going to have to do to Tom Brady. If they try to sit back and disguise or protect Gronk, they're making a big mistake because he'll, if you give him time, he'll just pick them apart like he always does. He's played them enough times. He knows their tendencies. But the one thing that's going to disrupt him is pressure. And in those games that you mentioned and those losses, that's exactly what happened. And but they've all happened on the road. So I think there's opportunities there for them. Yeah, the Patriots, they certainly aren't unbeatable. They're very beatable, but they're a good team. And, boy, do you have to give them credit. Their roster changes over, not from free agency defections, from Bill Belichick turning that roster over year after year on his own and still coming up with the same results. I know a lot of that's because of number 12, but it's amazing how they do it year after year after year.
It is amazing. He seems to have that ability, that sense of what the shelf life of a player is. I mean, that's how I've always looked at Belichick, that he seems to know what the, okay, you know what? I think you only got one more good year in you, and I don't want to like put us in a bad spot. Have you felt the same way?
Yeah, and he, it doesn't matter who you are. I mean, he's traded away, you know, some of their best players. Jamie Collins, you know, sending shipping out Chandler, and a number of guys. He lets them walk. And, you know, it's funny because the Steelers are the opposite. The Steelers protect their core players. They keep them. They retain them, and that's why they've been successful. They let the, you know, the kind of the periphery guys walk, or maybe a guy who looks like a nice starter. They identify the guys they have to keep, can't afford to lose, and they retain them. And with the exception of Brady and Gronk, Belichick is not afraid to let anybody to let anybody walk or move out of move out of town.
Jerry, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. I always enjoy the conversation very much.
Well, Steve, always good chatting with you, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, Jerry. Appreciate it, my friend.
You got it.
Jerry Dulac joining us. You hear Jerry, of course, on the Steelers Network, also with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And by the way, nobody writes about golf better than Jerry does, in my opinion. So football, golf, whatever sport it may be, he's just, he's a Penn State guy. Come on. Come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us. Santa tonight, 6 to 7. Now, tomorrow, it means there'll be, when Shikalimi plays basketball tomorrow, that means there'll be no pregame show. Excuse me, as I wipe a tear.
It's actually a 7:30 tip tomorrow night, so yes, we will hear from Kev. And I didn't mean to burst your bubble. I'm sorry.
Start at 7:06.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. It'll probably be early fourth quarter of the JV game when they fire things up from the gym.
Oh. Brutal. All right, so. I've analyzed all 13 players on each team. Oh, no. And he's going to tell us about it. He's going to tell us about it.
So Lords and Schick tomorrow night, and then as soon as they're done, we'll go right to the Chargers in Kansas City Thursday night on Westwood.
Now that is going to be a good game tomorrow,
yes.
I think.
Yep.
That game's in Arrowhead.
Yep.
It's It's kind of hoping the game would be at the StubHub Center. It's not only like the atmosphere of the StubHub Center.
Well, especially to get those shots from the blimp, you know? I mean, come on.
You know? 27,000 fans.
Yeah, it's like watching... Well, no, it's not. I'm trying to find a comparison, but I can't.
If you're trying to come up with a word, really, it's an intimate setting. No, it's not even that.
We've got a packed house. 28,000.
Well, because obviously I've been there a couple times. I mean, I know because Penn State practiced for the Rose Bowl. That, you know, not on the field. Okay, there's an area down below the field that is a practice field area. Did I ever tell you about the 2008 Rose Bowl? I'm down in the practice field. And then they got to like a lull in practice, which will happen. And Tommy Lasorda was at practice. And he held court for, I stayed for 20 minutes of it. I was laughing so hard. So hard. All right. So now they go back to practice. They're working. And Joe comes up to me and says, "Hey, Steve, did you get a chance to talk to Tommy Lasorda?" I said, "Well, Joe, I didn't do any of the talking. I did a lot of listening." He says, "Oh, you did meet Tommy Lasorda." Tommy Lasorda was one of the more delightful people I've ever met. The stories were unbelievable.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Was that Mark's brother-in-law that called in the show?
That's the only thing missing on his show on Friday mornings, right?
Yeah. Maybe if he wants to have my brother call.
There you go.
Oh, I got another compliment about him yesterday. This is all going to go to his head. I'm concerned.
Take his mind off the pickles that we still owe him. You know?
There are a lot of things we owe him. Which I try not to get into it, hoping that he forgets. All right. Very pleased to bring in for the first time this season the outstanding head basketball coach at Bucknell, Nathan Davis. Nathan, welcome back to the show. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on, and I hope you all are doing well and have a great holiday as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. All right. You are playing a tough schedule. In fact, you've got another tough one coming up with Ohio State. So give me an idea of how well you're playing and what you're seeing against this tough schedule that's a building block for the Patriot League.
Well, I think the good thing is that I believe we've played better for the most part in every game than the one before. The one I would say we didn't was when we played Fairfield after beating St. Bonaventure. I thought we took a little bit of a step back that night with our concentration and execution. But I think since then we played better each game. And I think that the good thing is about playing a tough schedule is our flaws are getting exposed. We have had a chance to work on some of those things to hopefully continue to get better. So when we get in league play, there's nothing that surprises us that we feel like we need to work on.
All right, I'm going to flip that around. You also find out what your strengths are. What are your strengths at this point, and how are they as building blocks for you moving forward?
Well, I think from a defense, offensive and defensive, our strength is versatility. I think that we've got good size across the board. I mean, with Jimmy Soto's playing the point at 6'3", 6'4", that gives us pretty good size across the board, and so we've got some versatility. I think the same thing goes offensive, where we've got a number of guys that can. I think everyone we put on the floor can make shots, I think, and from range. I think everyone we put on the floor can create shots. And so the big thing is to just play within ourselves and keep it simple and make the plays that are available and not try to force things. I think you look at offensively, we've had, I believe, five different guys now lead us in scoring, and like seven or eight guys have been in double figures. And so that's got to be something that we emphasize and continue to play unselfishly. Because it's a hard scouting. It's hard to take something away when everyone's capable of making plays. And as long as we do that, trust each other, we'll have a chance to score a lot of points.
You're through seven games. Have you found a rotation, or is it still a work in progress?
Oh, it's definitely still a work in progress. I mean, we've had we've had a number of guys out. Nate Justino, our starting center, has missed two games. I think we're going to get, looks like we're going to get John Meeks, who we projected to be in the lineup as one of our four men. We'll finally get to play his first game this weekend at Ohio State. So I think we're still trying to figure that out. We've had other guys in and out with injuries and nicks and that. And so it's going to be a process, I think, for the next month or so. We're trying to figure out where guys are and how they all fit in the rotation.
All right. Now you talked about trying to shore up what would be, quote, weaknesses at this point. Are they correctable weaknesses, in your opinion?
Oh, no doubt about it. I think everyone right now is still trying to figure themselves out to some extent. Maybe Duke a little less than the rest of us, but for the most part, we're all trying to figure it out. And I think that you look at the things that we have issues with. I think some of it is we lost three really good players. There's no doubt. There's no way around it with Nana Fallon, Zach Thomas, and Stephen Brown. And there's the consistency that everyone needs to have that we need to be better at. And I think we have been. I think we've practiced much better, and that'll carry over the games. I think that offensively, again, just situational and understanding where help's coming from and just making simple plays, that's something we can control. And I think defensively, again, focusing on scouts, understanding what we want to take away, being in position, understanding where we're trying to force guys to go, all that stuff is stuff we can control and we'll continue to get better at.
It's interesting is you haven't lost a game on the road yet. You won at St. Bonaventure, and Mark's team's always a good team. You won in Vermont. You won at LaSalle. What have you seen in those road moments where it's you and only you out there?
I think that some of it comes back to this is, and I don't want to make excuses because everyone's got to do it here, but when you're in school at Bucknell, you play weeknight games.
Yeah.
In class all day.
there's no way
around it, and there's a certain getting used to that you've got to do. And like I said, we play a lot of guys that are talented but haven't relied on all the time to be the guys that carry you through stuff. And I think there's some of that. I think that playing on the road, when you get a normal schedule, you get to get up, you get to eat, you get to do a shoot around, you get to go over more stuff throughout the day, and really kind of focus on the game. I think that certainly helps in some respects. I think that for whatever reason, we've had a better focus. I think one of the things that teams, especially our teams, have to learn and understand is that with the success this program's had over years and the reputation that you get in Slick Pavilion, you get everyone's best shot when they come in because they know how well they got to play to beat you. And you've got to be ready to meet that challenge mentally and physically. And I don't know that we've done that to the way we'd like to in every game. I thought, like I said, against Fairfield, I thought we didn't play very well. I thought we made a lot of uncharacteristic mental mistakes. I thought we didn't play up to our capabilities, and it cost us. I thought against Canisius, we actually played pretty well, but you got to give them credit for playing well. And I thought against Northeastern, I thought we played one of our better games so far of the year. They just played great. And I don't want to take anything away from them. There's things we could have done better, but I think you got to give them a lot of credit for the way they came in and played. But there's certainly, with concentration and focus and things like that, there's things we got to improve in.
What's interesting about your team, look, basically, if anybody looks at any stat sheet as regularly as you and I look at stat sheets, you know darn well that for the most part, most teams score more points in the second half than the first half. Part of that is sometimes the number of free throws that you shoot in the second half based on how the game's going. But your numbers are really different between first and second half. Why such the disparity?
That's a good question that we've been trying to figure out a great answer for that I'm not sure we have. I have some theories. I think some of it goes back to with the way we've changed up the way we practice a little bit recently because I think that we were starting off a little slow in practice, and I think that reflects itself in the game, so we need to do better with that. So we've tried to address that is kind of the big thing, and to be more prepared for how teams are going to come after you right away so we can get off to better starts.
Okay, there's no doubt that I think in any league, and you referenced Duke. Duke's one of those teams that can be really young, but you know, Mike will be the first one to tell everybody, "Hey, look, Jack White, who's an older player, means everything to them." And Zion Williamson will say that as well. For the most part, in college basketball, despite the one and duns, old usually is better and goes deeper. You're in an interesting position right now. How do you look at your veteran players on the team, and what do they need to do to help your younger players?
I think the biggest thing for our guys is consistency. I think that, like we said, we graduated. There's no way around. We graduated three really good players that were able to bail us out of times when maybe other guys weren't playing as well as they're capable of. I think now with those guys long, we have guys capable of playing at a high level. They got to do it all the time. And it goes back to how do you practice, how do you prepare for games so that you can come through in those situations. I think that you need to have, I think, a great line is something Greg Popovich said. You need to have the appropriate level of fear every time you take the floor. Not the kind that debilitates you where you can't move and react, but the kind where you understand that the other team can beat you. And if you aren't locked in and playing at a high level, you're in trouble. If you do, you've got a great chance to beat everybody. And I kind of think that's where we are. We've got some guys that have been more of a role guy with the other guys we've had around the last 3 years. They're being asked to be more consistent. And I think that they, you look at, of course, I think they have played better since the beginning of the year. You look at Avi Toomer, who starts as a freshman, but part of why he was starting was he didn't need to have the ball in his hands to be an effective player. He's put up 17 in the last two games. They've been a lot more active. Bruce Moore, early on, he struggled a little bit in his first two games. Came back with back-to-back 16, 18-point games. Jimmy Sotos, who started some as a freshman last year, but again was playing more of a role. Now as the primary ball handler, started out, I think he was minus 6 or 7 after two games of his turnovers. Now he's plus, getting 36 to 30. So I think everyone's stepping in the right direction and understanding how hard it is to concentrate and play at that level all the time. But I think we're going to continue to get better at that. And everyone goes through that. Like, you know, everyone goes
through
that.
Everybody. Look, this is a marathon, okay? All everybody right. goes through that. It's also been a while since you played because of finals. You know, Ohio State's in the same boat. The last time they played was a Big Ten game against Illinois. How did you handle practice finals-wise? And is there any key to get them out of that, you know, I'm done with finals and get you back in the gear? Is there anything that's a magic formula?
I wish there was. We'd give it to them. I think that over time I've kind of found that, I mean, finals at Bucknell are no joke. Guys are, you come to school here because academics matter to you, so you're going to be very focused. And so I think you've got to find a balance between that and getting done what you need to get done on the court. And a mental balance, too, because it can wear you out. And, you know, when you get tired and are up too late, you can, doing one thing, you can lead to injuries in other areas. So you got to be careful and efficient about how you want to use your time. So what we did, and finals here are different in that we go over a two-week period. We started last Thursday. The last day of finals here is tomorrow. So we really took, after we played against LaSalle, we took 2 days off. We took Wednesday and Thursday off last week, got back in Friday, because RNA tested over the weekend, got back in Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for about an hour and 15 minutes, and really just tried to kind of run up and down and stay in shape and not overwhelm them with everything going on the court. Try to emphasize a couple things that we need to work on. And then we took off the last 2 days also. And with the way our finals go, we're going to come back in tonight. We have a bunch of guys, actually, their last tests were today. We have four guys that have them tomorrow, but we'll come back in tonight and start preparing for Ohio State tonight, tomorrow, because of our test, because we're going to get in for an hour and just shoot and kind of let the guys have finished up, get some sleep and refresh themselves. Then we'll practice again with everybody Friday morning to get ready for the Buckeyes and then get on the bus and go to Columbus.
Yeah. Well, good luck in the shot in Columbus, and good luck with the inside-outside Caleb West and C.J. Jackson combo. Good luck with that, and look forward to talking to you again.
Good.
Yeah, no, they are
pretty,
pretty good. I mean, you know, I mean, adding Keyshawn Woods, I think, helped them. I mean, I think that's helped them. I think Dwayne Washington Jr. has been a nice add for them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, they're good, and the guy coaching them does a good job too. It just makes everything hard. Every possession's hard.
I mean, I know Penn State beat them three times last year, but my goodness, two of them were grinders. I mean, just absolute grinders. All right.
You know, and they're playing faster than he has, I think, over the years this year. I think they're pushing a little bit more.
Well, I think he is, because I think he's got the personnel to do it. And you know, you adapt all the time because you're a really good coach. You adapt to your personnel all the time. And I think Chris has guys that can move, so he's moving.
He's doing a good job. He always does. It's going to be a challenge, but I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing what we can do.
It'll be great. Hey, good luck on Saturday, and thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you, and have a great holiday.
You have a great holiday, too. Nathan Davis, basketball coach, Bucknell. They got Ohio State Saturday at the Shot in Columbus at Value City Arena. Boy, I'll tell you, they've become a... they've added in Keyshawn Woods. I mean, they still have a couple guys. Andre Weston's not much of a scorer in the backcourt. He's a little bit better than he was. You know, Musa Jallo and guys like that. But they've added in Luther Muhammad, good player. Dwayne Washington, good player. C.J. Jackson, I've always liked C.J. Jackson. And I've always felt that Caleb Weston inside was a tough out. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will have Andrew Callahan, 24/7 Sport, actually MassLive.com, covers the Patriots now.
We're happy he's up there, but yeah, we miss him at 24/7 Sports. Loved when you and him were breaking down Nittany Lions tape last year.
He was great. Did a great job. Well, now he does that with the Patriots. And we'll talk with him. And then the bowl picks. The 22-time defending champion.
Wow, what number? Okay. It's just in.
He doesn't brag. He just thinks big.
Blackjack plus one. Okay.
And we'll be doing picks. The suit will be there. The king. The king, by the way, the two-time defending overall champion. Soon to be supplanted by you.
Yes. Another great week last week.
Oh, what were the numbers last week?
I left them at my desk. But I was... Last week I was 5-1. You and Kevin were 4-2.
Yeah, okay.
So the swing game was the Bears-Rams game. That was the swing game.
I picked the Rams, and I thought the Rams were going to kill them. How did I know that suddenly Jared Goff got into a slump? Ay, yay, yay. And I agree with my brother. Aaron Donald, I think Aaron Donald's really, really good. But if I heard one more person say, hey, he's the MVP of the league. There have been two defensive MVPs of the league in my lifetime, Carl Eller and Lawrence Taylor. He is not Carl Eller. Alan Page. Alan Page and Lawrence Taylor are the only two defensive MVPs I can think of in my lifetime. He is not Alan Page, and he is not Lawrence Taylor.
Mm-mm.
He's not even the same. If they're going to a room, I'd have Aaron Donald hold the door for them. Now, maybe over time,
10 years from now, we'll see,
Yeah, but now?
No.
I watch him now, and I see some really, really good plays, and I see a bunch of plays where I'm not even sure he's on the field. I know people are desperate in this era. Desperate. He's the greatest. No, he's not. I can name 8-9 guys right away off the top of my head. Erlen Olsen and Reggie White and, Bob Lilly. Go on and on with guys. And he's really, again, Aaron Donald's really, really good.
Sure, absolutely.
But he's not the MVP of the league. Give me a break. My goodness. I don't know who the MVP of the league is. I guess my first leaning probably would be toward Patrick Mahomes.
I'd say either him or Drew Brees. I'd probably lean more toward Pat as well.
Brees? I put Philip Rivers in there. Philip Rivers had a great year.
Yeah, what you and Jerry were talking about earlier in the show. Absolutely, yeah.
He's had a great year.
Where would they be without Philip?
Yeah.
Because Gordon's been out for a couple of games.
You can never forget Tom Brady. These are all quarterbacks. Hey, position players, Ty Gurley's been great. Donald's teammate.
I think that was the big glaring thing from Sunday night. How shut down. That Bears D. Todd Gurley absolutely shut down. You just chalk it up just a bad night at the office or combination of things, cold weather, maybe.
And Goff was just absolutely ineffective. And that's two straight games he has not played well. They got away with one. They did not get away with the other. Interesting. See, Mahomes has not really had what I call a fall off. And Rivers has been good the entire time, but Gurley's been really good. Is Donald maybe the best defensive player in the league right now? Yeah, is it the MVP? No way.
Yeah, it's like with other quarterbacks in the league when they build up the body of work, especially when you get into year two, year three. We have to say that year two, year three, especially for Mahomes since he didn't play last year. It just makes you wonder when the defenses are finally going to catch up with him.
Well, I don't know. They've had a whole season to try and catch up. Look, when I look at pure release, just the release of the ball. When I think of guys that have had the greatest releases of the football in my lifetime, Dan Marino, John Elway,
Joe Namath. His release is like theirs. He does things athletically where, like, he's rolling and all of a sudden, boom, flick of the wrist, and he throws the ball across the field. Off balance. How do you do that? How do you do that? It's amazing.
That's from a guy that puts ketchup on a steak. But who are we to judge? Because he's not an A1 or Heinz 57 guy.
Who cares if he puts ketchup on a steak?
I'm just throwing that out there for fun.
If that is how he likes his steak,
so be it. God bless
put
him.
Put ketchup on your steak. I mean,
just having fun with it.
I mean, it's not like he sits there and says, I can't believe he puts ganja on his steak. I'm like, no. It's ketchup. There's nothing wrong with it. People put ketchup on eggs.
Yes. Sure do.
You know?
Actually, I think my younger brother-in-law, he likes ketchup with his steak too.
I mean, I always eat the steak just as it is. I don't put anything on it. I mean, I eat a baked potato, no butter, nothing. Nothing. No sour cream. I just eat the potato. Vegetables, no. If I get an ear of corn, I put nothing on it, I just eat the ear of corn.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, I mean, boiled.
Well, sure,
but I don't put butter or salt on it. I just eat it. I just think it tastes better to me. I don't salt any of my food. And there's no reason why I'm not sitting there saying I need to cut out salt. I need to cut out butter. No, that's not the reason why. It's just I taste it and it tastes good enough to me as it is.
You enjoy the natural flavor. Why mess it up?
Well, it's like, well, Jack Ham, of course, Jack Ham eats really, really well. And so we're sitting down at dinner one night, you know, with Jeff and Roger, whatever. And he said, he looked over, he says, you didn't put anything on your food, did you? I said, no. So he says, you know, and he knows all this stuff because he and Joanne talk about it all the time. He says, there's already natural salt in there. Natural fats in there. He says, then he looks at me and says, what you're doing is good. I said, you know why? I said, if I stay alive, I can aggravate you longer.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.